Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. And if it sounds a little redundant, it is, because that's the way I open these programs. I remember last week mentioning that I'd gone back through some of my old programs going back 3-4 years, and I've been introducing the program like this, and it works and it flows well, and we are having a lot of fun with this broadcast as well, bringing you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, and we broadcast live on the internet. We stream at richarddugan.com, so we encourage you to check out the website, check out the radio shows page where we archive all of our programs, and we'd like to hear from you as well. My email address is richard@richarddugan.com. That's richard@richarddugan.com. And we come your way every week providing you information that hopefully will help to free you up from some of the things that are kind of keeping you down, if you will, that aren't allowing you to move forward in your life. And you know what? I'm not immune to that. Just because I'm doing this radio program doesn't mean I have it all together. I'm still working. I'm a work in progress, just like you. I just have the great fortune of having this this forum, this broadcast, to provide you with this kind of information, such as information from our guest today, who has been on the program before, and he has a new website with some new information. It's old information, but it's new information. It's a program that he makes available to you at his website. His name is Chaney Weiner, and his website is of the same name, chaneyweiner.com. Chaney, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me back, Richard. It's a great pleasure to be here, and I also want to say thank you for having the show and for having all these wonderful guests on, because you're certainly making a difference in the world.
Well, thank you. You know, it's funny that you should say that, because there are times, and as I said just a moment ago, I'm not immune to the same things. I'm human. I am. I haven't worked it all out. I wish I had, because then I could really help. But there are times when I wonder. I really do. I interview these folks and wonderful accolades like what you have just shared, and I do appreciate it, and thank you very much for that, unsolicited. Nonetheless, we're all trying to, and I'm going to use the title of your program, we're all trying to break through to achieve, well, whatever it is that we're trying to achieve, whether it's success, happiness, wealth, relationships, job, and the list goes on. You know, we're all trying to move forward in our lives and let go of some of the old stuff that's been holding us back, that's been keeping us down. I guess I could frame it in the context of, you know, a set of chains like Jacob Marley wore in a Christmas carol. You know, we want to break those chains. And you have a program, it sounds to me like, within a short period of time, which is kind of unusual. And we're not talking about minutes here. But in a fairly short period of time, we can break those chains?
Absolutely. And you brought up about the time frame, and you mentioned specifically short time. And I just wanted to make a quick note of that. And, yeah, it can be done. It just depends on the person, the situation, what area of life it is. Because some people can break through things in 2 minutes, and some people it may take a few hours. Some people it could take a few weeks. It really depends on what it is. But the program, actually, since you brought it up, the program really centers around helping people dissolve, break through, overcome distracting emotions so they can, in a sense, gain more clarity and really to realize the magnificence, brilliance of who they are. And it's through that is where someone can come up with that product or that service or that idea, that inspiring service that can help other people. And that can just help somebody in any area of their life. So, for example, if someone is looking to attract money or have more money, that's what the program does. It helps somebody to break through that, let's say, emotional baggage, gain clarity, and then go on to do whatever it is they would love to do most in whatever area of life is most important to them.
Now, I need to know if this is in any way, shape, or form related to, connected with, or similar to what we've been talking about on this program the last few weeks in regards to the law of attraction.
Yeah, you could. Let me put it like this. It's interesting you bring about the law of attraction. To answer your question directly, yes, it is. But it's important to understand what that entails, because many people saw The Secret, many people became much more aware of the law of attraction and took it upon themselves, or just saw what other people were saying about it, that it's just a matter of saying affirmations, you know, I want to be rich, I want to be wealthy, I want to have my soulmate. That's part of it, but the other big piece to it is really knowing what your values are or what's most important to you, because if someone is saying, well, I have to do this, I'm supposed to do this, I've got to do this, that's not something that's higher on their values. That's something that they most likely have injected in from someone else saying that they should be doing this or they have to be doing this. Instead of saying, I love being a radio host, I love, or I'm inspired by doing radio shows, I'm inspired by interviewing people, I'm just using this, you know, that as an example, versus someone that says, I have to interview this person, I have to go to the studio today. It's not a matter of have to's. If you love doing it, you'll be inspired, and you'll and you know, you'll have a higher probability of attracting what it is that you want into your life. So the whole law of attraction really centers around the values and seeing the opportunities, taking action on those opportunities, and that's really how you manifest the things you want into your life.
You know, we've again, as I said, we've talked about this on numerous occasions on this program, and it seems like it is so simple. In one context, it is. It's very simple. But we still have, as individuals, if let's say, and again, by whoever's putting it out and calling it the law of attraction, we still have our own personal and internal work to do. You've created a program called Breakthrough to Achieve that people can check out at ChaneyWiner.com. We are linked to your website. And they can go through the various steps and the materials that you have available. Where, after we've gone to ChaneyWiner.com, where do we begin from there? I mean, is there a mindset that we need to sort of shift into? Should we meditate first before we begin this process? Is there a first step before we go to step two that is better than any other?
Well, the first and most important step is knowing, like I was just saying before, knowing what your values are. And I just want to clarify again what I mean by that. It means, well, I'll say it like this. Every person has a hierarchy or a set of values, something that's first most important, second most important, third most important, and so on down the line. And that's where it starts, because, again, many times people will say that they want, let's say, more money, but if the money's not showing up in their life, or they don't have a strategy, or they're not on track to do that, that means, and I see this with people all the time, that means they don't have a high value on it. And again, it's not a matter of saying, of putting a high value on money and then thinking it's going to show up tomorrow. The whole idea, and this is answering your question about the first step, is to know those values. So using money, you have a high value on money, and come up with enough reasons why and how you're going to use that money and move that up on your values, the money, to make that a higher priority. What will happen is you'll see more opportunities, you'll act on those opportunities, you'll take inspired action, and that's what really leads to the whole attraction process. So the first step is the values. Even before overcoming the emotional baggage, the distracting emotions, or letting go, as some people will say, before doing that, it's important to know the values, because without that, there's no direction to go in. So that's the first, and in fact, that was the one thing that was really left out of The Secret. They didn't really talk about that, which, in all fairness to the movie, they only had about 80 or 90 minutes to speak about it.
Right.
So I want to make sure people are aware of the importance of this, and it's, you know, it sounds simple, just knowing your values, but it's important to take the time and realize that, because that's what sets everything in motion.
You know, the thought just occurred to me as you're talking about time in particular. If I'm correct, 55 years ago, my parents celebrated their wedding. They celebrate their 55th wedding anniversary June 3rd of 2011. And I was privileged to be there when they celebrated their 50th, flew in from Santa Barbara to Phoenix for the day. It was a wonderful experience as far as being there for them. but I wish they'd had their anniversary in December as opposed to June. But the thing that I've noticed, and maybe we can delve off into this direction. I remember talking with my mother not too long ago. Matter of fact, it was right around Mother's Day. Made the Mother's Day call and chatted with her, and I said, "You and Dad, you didn't sacrifice anything, did you? You didn't sacrifice something else in order to have this family." And she said, "No, this was a choice that we made." And it's funny how I hear that phrase when people want to go do something. Someone says, "Well, but you're going to have to give up this in order to get that." If your choice is that, there's nothing to give up, is there?
That's an excellent point. And I'll take it from this angle. If you really, really look close, you'll see in any relationship or really in any situation, there is the give and take. The question is, where is the give and take? Because if somebody says, "Well, I never gave up anything," well, in some form you have. Now, in your example, what you were saying with your parents, now they may not have given up something, or they may not have given up something in one area of their life, but in another area of their life, in some form they have. So there's always that equal amount of give and take. Where the problem arises, not with your family, of course, but where the issue arises with people in any area of life, is when people think, "Well, I have to give more and then I'll get in return," mm-hmm. or that I deserve to receive more and I'm not going to give. I mean, when people start getting into those imbalances is when the issues come up. But really, in the ideal, let's say, healthy type of environment, you're going to have an equal amount of both. In fact, that's how the universe operates. There's give and take. There's nice and mean. There's kind and cruel. So that there's always that balance. It's when people try to violate that and get way more of one than the other, that's when they start to attract the things they don't want into their life.
I actually had a boss who lived by the law of diminishing returns. And you're obviously familiar with that.
Yeah.
And for our listeners, a quick description is, you don't put out more than what you expect to get back. And I had a real hard time with that, because I was always under the impression and the belief that you give as much as you can, whether you get anything back or not. And the reality is, using what you've just stated, there's always an exchange in the universe. So I can be giving and giving and giving. I will get back. It may not be in the form that I think it will be, but I will get back.
Well, it's interesting you bring this up, because just today I wrote my upcoming newsletter on that very thing, about altruism and giving and taking, or altruism and narcissism, because they are opposites. And the bottom line is, if people, and I will apply this to money in particular, people who feel that they must give, be altruistic, and that they're going to get something back, or let me say it like this, the people who are being altruistic all the time are actually the ones in most cases who end up financially destitute or broke. And at the same time, they have a hidden agenda. And that's something that a lot of people are not aware of, because, again, we live in a universe where there's giving and taking. Now, I'm not saying for people to go around and give something to someone else and say, "Well, you must give me back right now the exact thing that I gave you."
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, let's take somebody who may be very well known. They'll donate time, and they may do something for free, but they're not actually doing it for free. They may get publicity in exchange. They may be able to market themselves in exchange. So there's no way can somebody do one without the other. If someone attempts to do that, they will attract, again, something into their life to wake them up to realize that they're violating the universal law, really a fair exchange. Someone who's really on a high level of awareness will know this beforehand, or they will be able to detect it and say, "Hey, I'm kind of getting out of fair exchange. I'm getting a little bit too much on one side," and they'll bring themselves back into that balance. So we could do a whole show on this. And
sure.
It's something that really, it's important for people to be aware of this and understand. You can't try to give all the time and think that you're going to get back in return at some point. Because even at that point of giving, somebody may acknowledge you, somebody might recognize you in some way. So, again, it's an awareness and to know that this is taking place in all exchanges all the time.
I think also another imbalance has been from this the phrase, and it was taken from the Bible, but it's phrased, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And what I found so strange about that after thinking about it for a while was, well, wait a minute. If it's more blessed to give, and that's all we did was give, who's receiving? If there are 100 people in the room and every one of them is giving and nobody's receiving, then who are you giving to?
Well, that's a great form of marketing.
Well.
And you know what? In all fairness, I'm not labeling religious institutions per se, but you'll see this in different areas, in different businesses. But since you brought up the giving and taking, you mentioned the Bible, a lot of people associate it to that. And I don't know if you knew this, but this is really interesting. Robin Leach, who did Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
Yes.
He did a segment, this was a number of years ago, on the Roman, in Italy. I'm not too good on
the religion. Roman Catholic Church?
Yeah, Roman Catholic Church. And there is an underground, let's say, it goes seven levels deep. I believe it's beneath the Vatican. It's seven layers deep, and there is enough wealth in there for every person on the face of the earth to be a millionaire. You know, in paintings and gold and this, you know, all different things that are worth billions and billions of dollars.
Sure.
Obviously, somebody is gaining at someone else's expense, and I'm not labeling them, but, you know, you brought up the whole giving and taking, so people are giving to different institutions, but the people who are giving are the ones who are destitute, financially destitute.
Yeah, and now that's an interesting paradigm to take a look at, because and I understand what you're saying, and of course, it's not just with the Catholic Church. There are other organizations that do the same thing, whether they have a religious bent to them or not. And so what they're doing is they're stopping the flow. That's how it has always been described to me. It's always – the analogy has always been of the flow, the water or energy flow, if you will. And that if I am giving – let's just say I'm one of these people that wants to really help out and do what I can, and I give what I can without hurting myself, and I don't really see any gains. It's because I have expectations. Isn't that part of what is – and I, again, this goes back to the chains that are kind of holding us down that we talked about earlier. But isn't that that attitude of I'm going to give so I can get something in return? See, I do not declare on my taxes charitable contributions because I didn't give in order to get a tax write-off. That wasn't the purpose of it. And yet there are people that do that. I'm giving this so that I can write this off on my taxes and reduce my tax liability. You know, well, none of us are great fans of the taxation system in this country. Nonetheless, there it is. Isn't one's intent or motive for giving as well as receiving important? Isn't it kind of a key in this process?
Absolutely, and the intention, that's fine, but what the thing that most people are doing is they are giving, and I believe you said this probably in a different way, people are giving and they feel that if I give, I'm going to get something back in return. That's the hidden agenda, but on the outside they'll say, oh, I'm just going to give, mm-hmm. and I guarantee you, because I've done this with enough people, and I've seen this in others as well, when you start asking certain questions and you find out a person's situation, you will find out that, and it's not so deep and subconscious on some people, that you're going to find out they have an agenda for giving. They want something in return, but they're not going to tell you. They're just going to tell you what they have been conditioned to tell people, oh, I'm just going to give. It's a universal law. You can't violate giving and receiving. You can't get one without the other. So if somebody ever says, well, I'm just going to give, I don't want nothing in return, my answer to that is baloney, because they do, but they won't admit it because many times people don't feel that they're deserving. They may have a low self-worth, and that they've been conditioned, like what you were saying, it's better to give than receive. Well, I'm going to keep saying it. You cannot have one without the other. And you know what? It goes the other way as well. The person who may be perceived as, oh, he's always getting, he's always getting, he's always getting. Well, he can't, if that person, the narcissist, violates the law and he always wants to receive, that person will get a lesson too that, hey, it, you know, it's important for them to give as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is balance that's going on, and it's oh, we can go for a while on
sure,
that.
Sure. We're talking with Chaney Weiner. He has a website, chaneyweiner.com. He has a program for you to check out. It's called Breakthrough to Achieve, and this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay right where you are.
Tell me your story.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and it is time now for us to step aside here, if you will, to take a look at our weather map. Yes, I said weather map, but not the kind of weather that you're talking about. Yes, we experience cloud bursts. We experience sunshine. We get some winds. I mean, here on the Central Coast, over the last couple of weeks, Beth McDonald, we have had unbelievable wind. I'm going, wait a minute. Is Congress in session again? Because this is ridiculous. What's with the wind? But we can use these meteorological terms in a metaphorical sense as well to describe things that happen in our lives, the path that we go down, and sort of the weather conditions. And we've even talked about this with David Hawthorne, our Vedic astrologer, in terms of what he does and the map. Laying out the conditions that you will come across as you traverse your path, as you go about your journey. And so it's a forewarning. And that's kind of what we do with this segment with our AAA editor, Beth McDonald of BethMcDonaldConsulting.com. And I have experienced the night sky, if you will, and the overcast sky and the downpours in when it relates to the loss of a loved one. I've had that happen as a child. I mentioned that in a program last week when I talked about my grandmother passing. And then, of course, my paternal big brother. And I hope that's the right term. He is not, I am not blood. We were not blood brothers. But he was like a brother to me. So I referred to him as a paternal big brother.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the right term. I may have been using
it
that
works.
Wrong. Okay.
Yeah.
You yourself have experienced something that I know one day I will. My father is going to be 80 in August. My mother is, I think, 77, 76. If I'm wrong, and she's younger, she's older than that, I've paid her a compliment. But you just recently lost your father, which was not a surprise, but regardless, it's still a shock.
It's still a shock. It's still a tremendous shock, and it's all the things they say about it. It's a blessing. It's a great loss. You know, his suffering is over, and yet there's this void. And it is a time that is really one of coming together. The focus is on the family connections, the extended community, the extended family. You know, in my father's case, he was a veteran, and so there. Our lives are these concentric circles of communities, and sometimes they're Venn diagrams of communities. But, you know, all of my dad's military buddies, people I remember from a small child, you know, mm-hmm. calling and sending flowers and cards. And then we had the service mm-hmm. at the National Cemetery with the full military honors, and it was, you know, it was just very moving, very dramatic, and very astrologically on par.
I was just going to ask you if you were aware of the impending transition of your father, either psychically or even from the stars.
Very much so. Very much so. In fact, I've been working on this for 2 months with a variety of people that I turn to, you know, the psychics and astrologers and various healers and those in the helping professions.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number of indicators for loss and change, and the eclipses are not necessarily one of them. But, you know, we have three eclipses in June,
Oh,
and,
my.
One on June 1st, one on June 15th, and actually one on July 1st. So it's three in a 30-day period.
Right.
And all of them were impacting my chart in a very great way.
Wow.
You know, they don't always hit you. It's like the Mercury retrograde. They don't always hit you. But this one was gonna. Is hitting, you know, all three of them are impacting me. And so I remember looking ahead back in the spring and thinking, okay, if Dad was going to go, it would be now.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, it did. And so this is a classic example of what I call hope for the best, prepare for the worst, so that you can handle anything in between. If you know something may be looming,
right,
you can, like in this case, put a little money away,
mm-hmm,
you know, so that I've got the money for the extra travel expenses and begin to prepare the family, you know, emotionally. For a long time, I'd been saying to Dad, this is what you're likely to experience. I may not be there. Don't be afraid. You know, we'll take care of Mama, you know.
Yeah.
You when you start seeing the angels come for you and when you see that light, you don't hesitate. You know, you don't hesitate. You go. You have our permission. And
now, it's interesting. You and I, we've talked about these kinds of things. I've talked with various guests about this whole experience. Some people have had the near death. They've had the out of body and so forth. And it's like, boy, we get it.
Yeah.
Intellectually.
Yeah.
But it ain't the intellect that goes through it.
Right. Well, and it isn't. And in my father's case, there was some intense suffering for about 6 hours. And that there's even different schools of thought about that, though. There's a Buddhist tradition that says if you ask God to help you take on the pain and suffering of others, much like Christ did, mm-hmm, in his passing, that it literally lessens your physical pain. And, you know, I don't know. I've never been through it. I don't know if that's true, but it is an ancient tradition.
Yeah.
And so I assume there is some power and truth to it.
Yeah.
But
well, we know that we'll have you back next week to talk more about these kinds of things as
yes,
far as the planets and where they are and from an astrological standpoint and the various metaphors that we might use. I don't know. Maybe I'll come back with physics metaphors or plumbing metaphors. I have no idea.
But, yeah, it all works. You know, it's all good.
That's right.
It's all good.
But people can get a hold of you through BethMcDonaldConsulting.com.
Yes.
And one real quick question for you, and we
yes,
only have about 30 seconds. Was it? I understand, you know, the issue of the pain. But in his case, you know, all of this was a good thing because this is just
yes,
part of the, if you will, the natural process of our existence.
Yes.
We leave the vehicle behind.
Right. And he is free.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen him
yeah,
and he's more
yeah,
free than he's been in decades.
Great.
And happier than he's been in decades.
Thanks,
and
Beth. We'll talk to you next week.
Awesome.
Tell me your stories.
I'm Richard Dugan, and thank you for staying tuned to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com. We're live every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time, and we archive these programs at richarddugan.com. At this point in time, I'd like to take a little pause to send out our best wishes and thoughts, as well as our condolences to both the families of Beth McDonald, who lost her father 2 weeks ago, the reason she was not with us last week, but also to the family of Betty and Les Carroll. Betty lost her mother, a little Tanzani, on June the 2nd, Thursday, June the 2nd of this year, and we send out our prayers and our thoughts and good wishes for them to basically understand that she is still here. She is still here with us. She is as close as a conversation. Just because we don't have the physical body, which we do grow attached to, and we do want that physical connection with our friends and family and loved ones while they're here, and, you know, we'd love to have it when they're not here. But she's still available to Betty and to Beth McDonald. Her father is still available to her, just as Debbie Heenahan spoke of her connection with her sister last week on our program. So the communication lines are open, and we can converse with them, and all we have to do is listen and they'll talk back to us and with us and give us guidance and encouragement and inspiration if we are only willing to listen to that. So our thoughts and prayers and good wishes, if you will, for healing of the pain of loss come soon. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We're talking with Cheney Weiner. He is the owner and proprietor, if you will, of CheneyWeiner.com and a program called Breakthrough to Achieve. How did you get started in all of this? I know we covered this in our first interview, but our first interview was a long time ago, and we have a bunch of new listeners. And I think it would be rather interesting to hear how in the world you, of all people, came to the point where you are today.
Well, I can say now, when I trace it all back, that I mean, it really started back when I was, I'll say, 7 years old. I mean, I was always into sports. I played sports growing up, and then I got into fitness and working out. But the interesting thing was, when I got involved with the fitness, I was still into sports, particularly baseball, but I was always thinking, what about the other areas of life? What about friends, family, finances, career, and just the different, obviously physical health, because I was working out, sports. But what about the other areas of life? How do they work in with all this? And while other people or other kids I knew who were growing up at the time were just looking at it from just the one area, I was looking at all the other areas. Now, I didn't realize it at the time, but that's really where this all started. So as I went along in my life on my journey, I got involved in, it was computers, it was psychology, it was physical therapy, it was communication, which is what I ended up getting my degree in, and I, went down that route and, in a sense, down the psychology route as well, but it all, in essence, merged into what I'm doing now. That's why what I speak about and teach involves the different areas of life. It stemmed off of that. And just realize I'm giving the condensed version here because I can spend easily an hour just going through the whole. In fact, if people go onto my site and they go under About Cheney, you'll see a link on it. It says The Journey, and if you click on there, you'll get a little bit more detailed version of what I'm saying here. Mm-hmm. And really, it really came out of what took place when I was younger, just those different areas of life. For some reason back then, I was just fascinated with how the other areas work together, and I didn't know why. I just knew that they were all important. So that's what ultimately led me to doing what I'm doing now.
Now, forgive me if I do any stereotyping here, and it's not my intent. It's more for the purposes of definition. You have an accent in your voice that makes it sound as if you're from parts of New York.
You're close.
Or New Jersey. And I bring this up to say this to our listeners, and I'm going to have you expound further on this. You, if someone were to just be listening to you going, this guy's from the East Coast, what the heck does he know about this stuff? You know? I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it doesn't seem as though there's a lot of higher thought going on. It's all economics and money and marketing and those and even sports, which, again, I'm a big baseball fan too. And I think there are some books out there and people who've written books on the spiritual qualities or aspects of or how you can translate baseball into a spiritual metaphor. I'm sure they're out there. But it just seems like we tend to judge a book by its cover. You know what I mean? And yet here you are. You've had these incredible experiences, and you've created this website and this program, again, Breakthrough to Achieve. And you're trying to help people to rise above those things that are holding them down. Have you ever felt challenged in that way, or has it even ever been a thought to you?
In terms of
where you come from, geographically, and even ancestrally, for that matter.
Well, honestly, I don't really feel or let's say perceive that that's ever been an issue. And just real quick, I was born in New York. I moved out of there when I was a year and a half, lived mostly in New Jersey, and I lived for 9 years in Florida. Now I'm in South Carolina. So about a third of my life has been out of that area. And actually, I lived in California for about 4 or 5 months.
Okay.
On two separate occasions. But it's interesting that you bring up about the East Coast, because obviously, being in personal development, self-help, I come across a lot of people from the West Coast, particularly California, Oregon, Seattle, whole West Coast.
Oh, yeah.
But it's really interesting. One thing I have really been seeing, I would say over the last year and a half or two, I'm coming across a lot more people from, of all places, New York City, a lot. I wouldn't say as much as out in the West Coast, but it's a lot more than I thought, because I talk to a lot of people from that area, particularly New York.
Yeah.
Really interesting. And some in New Jersey. But to answer your question, in terms of the whole stereotyping, like I said, I've never come across that. And personally, I haven't.
Okay.
Now, I can't say if other people have, but I really haven't, because, you know.
And that's a good thing, obviously.
Yeah.
And yet you travel around the country?
Not lately, but I've been out in different parts, like Texas and California and Florida.
And you've had the opportunity to meet with people. Do they all seem to, in one form or another, they all seem to have the same hurdles to get over?
They've had the same challenges, but in different forms.
Okay. And what are those? Maybe put it down in a list of 3 to 5 or something like that?
Well, some people it's a money issue. Some people it's a relationship issue. Some people it's I don't know what it is I want to do issue. So it's different areas of life, but within each of those areas, it typically will center around somebody minimizing themselves to others, thinking someone else is better than them, or they minimized themselves and thought that it was better to give more than it was to receive, and they ended up in a financial situation they don't want to be in. Career-wise, they have, in a sense, minimized themselves and said, well, you know, I have to, I'm supposed to be doing this instead of what they love to be doing, because somebody else told them, well, you have to go to school, you have to get a degree, and they really didn't end up doing what they wanted to do. So it shows up in different forms in different people.
Mm-hmm.
And really, as far as the part of the country, it's really scattered. I pretty much, if it's Texas or California or New York or Florida, it's the same, but it's just different amongst each person based on their particular situation.
Right. It's interesting, too. I've had the pleasure of interviewing people who have traveled around the world, and I kind of asked the same kind of question, you know, are the people in other parts of the globe dealing with the same challenges, the same issues that we are here in the West? I mean, I suppose that, you know, logic would dictate that if you're living in an impoverished country, you're dealing with some pretty more basic issues than what we are here. We're worried about, you know, is the economy going to go up? Is my house value going to go up or down? Will I have a job tomorrow? Whereas people in third world, fourth world, or, you know, underdeveloped countries are wondering where they're going to get the next meal, and whether they're even going to make it to tomorrow because they haven't eaten.
It's interesting that you bring this up, because I've been to Brazil 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
I was there in 2000, 2002, and then New Year's 2004 going into 2005. And this is my former wife, because she was from Brazil.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when I went there, well, we stayed by her mother. She lived about literally a block from the beach. The beach was right across the street, literally. And thankfully, I was with somebody who was from the area and knew the ins and outs and what to look for, because, and I'm talking Rio de Janeiro.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really nice area in terms of the beaches and for the guys, the women, or for the women, the men. But if you don't know where you're going, you can really find yourself in a life-threatening situation. So getting back to what you were saying, people in Brazil, and Rio is more, let's say, less third world than some of the other areas in Brazil. So people in the United States, like you said, are, oh, is the value of my house going up? Is the stock market, is this? in Brazil, they are, okay, I just want to make sure I don't wander into the wrong part of the neighborhood because there's a good chance I'm going to get killed.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that, and I didn't even get into the whole money because the economy there isn't so great from what I have heard from people. In other words, somebody here who may be making $40,000 a year, that same job there is maybe $5,000 a year.
Wow.
In their money and, you know, in their currency. So yeah. It gives you a lot to be grateful for depending where you're at.
That's true. Yeah. You know, I had a conversation with a gentleman the other day and we were talking about this whole issue of money in particular. And that seems to be at the top of everybody's list these days. I mean, you know, it just is. I mean, it's because we're bombarded by this information, you know, on an hourly, if not minute-by-minute basis from the media. And he said, you know, it's funny. I thought about that, too. And he says, it's strange how human beings on one day of the year will be fairly generous, but the rest of the time we treat each other like we do. You mean to tell me that there is no humanity in the economic system?
That's pretty interesting. And really, it doesn't matter if it's the end of the year or New Year's or Christmas, whatever it is. It's important to treat every day pretty much the same.
Yeah.
And, you know, this goes back to what we were saying before about the giving and the taking. And what it really comes down to is, again, can I give without receiving? And as far as the whole humanity part of it is, it's not any more, let's say, humane if you're giving and thinking, oh, well, actually, this goes back to what we were saying. If somebody is giving, but they're getting that recognition in return, well, they're also receiving something. Now, here's
yes.
the key. If that person who is receiving that recognition has a high value on money and how to make money, they will look at that situation and go, wow, you know, I'm getting recognition in return for giving whatever it is they gave. And then they can learn, and if they have a high value on money, they'll make money from that opportunity. But, you know, many times people will misconstrue that and say, well, this person's just giving and they're expecting money in return. So there's this whole perceptual thing that's going on. But again, it comes down to the values and just being aware of what we've been speaking about in regards to giving and taking.
Yeah. I had a job back in Phoenix, started this job working at minimum wage, which was at that time $3.65 an hour. And I was new in the business, so, you know, what did I know? I figured, okay, that's fine. You know, at least I'm making something. 15 years later, I left that job, and I was making double that. 15 years later. Now, a lot of my coworkers, and many of them I hired and trained, came in with the attitude that you guys don't pay me enough to do that. You don't pay me enough to dust. You don't pay me enough to vacuum the carpets or clean the toilets and the sink in the bathroom or blah, 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 whatever. And I thought, you know, I could go down that road and I could say they don't pay me enough. And so what ends up happening is some people will start to steal from the employer. And I remember a news story from CNN in the mid-late 80s about IBM. They laid off over, 1,000 people at this one particular plant because they had found that over $1 million worth of materials had disappeared from the plant. Well, it didn't disappear. The employees were probably stealing from the plant.
It got legs and walked away.
Exactly. And so I started thinking about that. Okay, what if I don't, what if I'm not getting a fair exchange from my employer as far as dollars for work, for service rendered? I had the distinct privilege of conducting interviews, even such as this, for, you know, 5 days a week for half an hour in the evening, and I would record them and they would play and we would play them and so forth. And I did that for 15 years and I received books and CDs and I made relationships, some of which I've carried over into this program because they kind of fit. And that's where I saw my exchange, not from the employer, but from the opportunity that I took a hold of to start doing these kinds of interviews. And that made all the difference in the world. Then I didn't resent my employer for not paying me a decent wage. There was no reason to, because I was actually being given an opportunity that I wouldn't have anyplace else.
And that's the key distinction you made, is the opportunity that you, let's say, gained from it, and number two, the value that you have on doing what you love. Now, in terms of somebody who, using the story that you just mentioned about people who feel that they deserve more. If somebody wants to make more money, the bottom line is come up with a product, a service, or an idea that serves and provides tremendous amounts of value to people, and learn how to market it, and you will make money. So people who are in, who have this self-entitlement attitude that, well, the world owes me, that's narcissism.
Yeah.
They want to receive, but they don't want to give. In this case, the giving would be the product, the service, or the idea that's of value to other people. I mean, just take a look at Bill Gates. There's a reason why Bill Gates is the richest guy in the world for, I believe, what, 15 or 14 out of the last 15 years,
yeah.
Because he provided basically a product.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, a product, you could say a service as well. He had the idea, he came up with it, and he had a high value on business and making money. But the bottom line is he has given people, now some people are going to, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole Microsoft and Apple story, but the bottom line is, like him or not,
yeah.
He came up with the product, the service, the idea that served people, provided value to people, and he learned how to market it. And
yeah.
That model, yes, he makes billions and billions of dollars, but that model could be used by anybody.
Sure.
And who's to say that somebody can't make billions of dollars? You can. It's just a matter of putting in the time and effort and doing the things that I just mentioned.
I'd even throw in one more to that list, and that is if that's really what you want to do.
Exactly.
You know,
I'd love to do.
I wouldn't mind having an extra 5 or 6 digits in my bank account on a regular basis. That would be fabulous. You know, 7, 8, or 9 digits. You know, okay, fine. But I mean, you know, when is enough enough? I mean, you know, there are some people who have so much that they'll never spend it all in their lifetime.
Well, true, and I'm sure with Bill Gates, at the current state that he's at and really has been for a while, he's now into the philanthropy. So he
exactly.
He gave, now he's giving back.
Mm-hmm.
But let's face it, Bill Gates is giving and he's getting something in return. He's getting recognition. It could be, you know, maybe a better public perception, but he's getting something in return.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not the strings attached type of thing. And I guarantee you, I obviously don't know him. I mean, I know someone who actually dated him, but I don't know him personally, but I guarantee you, if you were to sit down with him, you would hear something along the lines of what we're speaking about here, the giving and taking, because if he didn't know that, he wouldn't have the money that he has right now.
That's true, and you can kind of look at that. Another aspect, too, is a shift in attitude, a shift in mentality, a shift in perception of what, and again, I realize we're focusing on money because that's sort of, you know, the topic today around the world. It's also the ability to handle what you're given. I'll use a very simple example, the lottery and lottery winners. A person who has just won a multimillion-dollar lottery jackpot today will be in exactly the same spot 365 days from now if they have not learned how to handle that volume of money. But if they handle it just like they've always handled money, it'll be gone in a year. The statistics bear that out.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was 1 year or 3 years. I've heard a number of different numbers at 95% of the people within 3 years. I've heard 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is when somebody, I love the lottery example. In fact, I talk about this a lot. And I even bring this example up in my program to make the point that I'm going to make right now.
Okay.
And it's something that many people most likely have not thought about, but it's the very thing that is actually running that dynamic. And again, I'll use a lottery example, but this applies to relationships or any other area of your life. If you attract something or have something come into your life that is above your normal functioning capacity, such as somebody winning the lottery, and here's the key, unless you're able to manage your emotions, in this case as it applies to money, you will go through that money like opening up the water faucet and having that water come right through. And in fact, it's interesting. Warren Buffett said, until you can manage your emotions, don't ever expect to be able to manage wealth. And that's why people who win the lottery, unless they know how to handle that new situation coming into their life, they'll go right through the money. Because typically what will happen, people will get elated, they'll get cocky, they'll get puffed up, they'll have extreme positive emotions. And the way the universe works, the universe will say, well, if you are not in a poised manner and understand that, hey, there's supports and challenges, there's pains and pleasures, there's new responsibilities, there's new accountabilities that come with that money, if somebody doesn't become aware of that and realize that, their emotions will run their show. They'll do foolish things with their money. They'll make foolish deals. And then all of a sudden, the vultures will come. People will come in. They'll say, oh, give me money for this, give me money for that. The person is just all emotional. And next thing you know, they go through the money. And I'm giving a quick version of this, but that's the underlying dynamic of what happens. And it happens in relationships. If somebody meets a new person and they get all infatuated and elated with that new person, it won't be money there, but that relationship, pretty good chance it won't last. So it all comes down to emotions and being able to manage those emotions. And I like to use the word being poised. So to anyone listening, if you have something new and big coming into your life, just ask, well, what are the new accountabilities, the new responsibilities, the pains and pleasures? Bill Gates has pains and pleasures, and he has fears in his life on different levels. Mm-hmm. There may be someone who's making $30,000, $40,000 a year, but he's got that as well. And it's all in how you handle them, manage them, and how you react to those situations is what counts.
And a very good point to end on. Chaney Weiner, thank you so much for sharing your time and your story with us. And your website, which is ChaneyWeiner.com, and your program, which is Breakthrough to Achieve. It's been a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, Richard. And I appreciate all that you're doing and certainly appreciate this opportunity. So thank you again.
You're very welcome. I'm Richard Dugan, and this has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we'll come your way next Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific time. And we'll be streaming live on the Internet at RichardDugan.com. And this program will be available shortly after the broadcast. It'll be up there in the archives page. We call it the radio shows page. And Chaney will be right at the top of the list of 2011. And so before we sign off, I want to wish my mother and father a happy anniversary, 55th wedding anniversary. And until next Saturday, love to all.